Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast. I'm Christophe Madden, I'm your host, and I'm joined with the total full crew today. Grace Brown with us. How are you, Grace?
I'm good as per usual. Thanks.
Yeah. And Maka.
Good to be here.
It's the week before the Giro, a few days before the Giro. It's always something special for you, the Giro, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they're all special. The Giro is special, yes. Spent plenty of time racing there, living there. But no, lot to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
There's results. There's been, and overnight, come on.
Yeah.
I'll let you lead it.
No, big news, because we'll talk about the Giro, we'll talk about all the racing, but I thought we would start with the not so much breaking news this morning, but breaking news last night. We were messaging all of us, each other. Caleb Ewan decided in his own will, in his own words, to retire. A long statement that was published and followed on by the team. Thank yous. So he was organized, but it was the time for Caleb. Why now?
Well, I guess firstly I'll say, surprised but not unexpected. We knew he was going to retire. We probably didn't expect it to happen middle of the season. We're not even middle of the season, you can argue. But we knew it was coming, and I think good on him, you know?
Yeah.
I think he's had two wins.
Yes.
He's had two wins. He's only raced three tours, I think.
Okay, we talk about this, actually. You, as a very fresh ex-racer, the importance of having these two wins for him to retire peacefully and live happily ever after. These two wins means the world, I guess, mentally for him.
Yeah, I was quite taken by his statement. You know, he had some really rough years recently, and then he was dogged in working back to that winning way, and, you know, it's been a great start to the season with Ineos, and we saw him winning.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact that in those winning moments, it wasn't the same as previously.
Like, that's a key point.
Acknowledging,
I think, isn't it?
The last couple of years had taken the love of the sport away from him, and doing the hard work to get back there, and then realizing, well, actually, no, I need something else now. Like, that's not filling my cup anymore. Is quite mature.
Yeah.
He always has been.
Yeah. So I resonated a lot with that statement of his, and I think he's done. It's a very mature decision to say, okay, I'm done now. It's not what I need anymore, and I'm ready to stop now, rather than pushing to the end of the year. And then if he'd done that, he probably would have finished on a low because it wasn't in his heart anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maka, just a blunt question. Was he burnt mentally more than physically?
Oh, 100%, I'd say. I mean, you can never take away, and especially a sprinter like him, any sprinter, you crash more, generally speaking. We know he's had a couple of big crashes that have taken him out of the Tour de France, I think the Giro as well. So, you know, for a sprinter there, the two biggest races, you get multiple opportunities at you know, raising your arms above your head. So they hurt, but absolutely, mentally, he was more done. And that's not a criticism. That's just a fact, I think, Grace. And you can, as Christoph said to you then, you know, you can give more fresh eyes and a fresh view on that than I can. But I know myself, you know, when you retire physically, I could have kept going, absolutely. But he's just done. And I think that's really good. And as you say, mature. And what it shows is, I don't think he'd planned to retire right now. I think he wanted to push ahead. He worked hard to get back to where he was. And then, as you say, that was the key part in his quote there, that he won that race, had a win, and went, it actually doesn't, it's not doing it for me. It's good, it's fine, but it's not doing it for me what it was 5 years ago or 3 years ago. And that's okay.
Yeah.
He's human. And sprinters, and sorry, I'm going on a bit here, but
no.
The life of a sprinter these days, take Mark Cavendish out of the picture, because he is one of a kind. We know that. And he's got that with that record at the Tour de France. The life of a sprinter is a lot shorter than what it used to be. Marcel Kittel.
They shine a few years, and then
they shine 3 to 4 years if they're really, really good. Maybe one more, but that's about it. And it just shows the real toughness of the sport, and that the one percenters and the attention to detail that you've got to be so focused. And you know this.
Yeah.
You know, your specialty was time trialing, but you were good at everything. You were a really good all-rounder, but the attention to detail, it's a job, isn't it? Not just on the race day.
Yeah, and really to be able to do that, you need to love it. You need to be mentally 100% in, because as soon as you stop caring quite so much, then you just can't have the attention to detail. You know, you're going to let a few things slide, and then all of a sudden you're just finishing.
Yeah, that's a very important point you make, because for the general public, you would think 99% is good enough. No, you need to be, especially as a sprinter, is 100% on every sprint.
Yep.
99% does not give you the win. And therefore, you're the first loser.
Definitely. And for me, like a lot of people, like, why did you retire and what seemed to be your best year? And partly it was my year last year was my best year, because I was going all in for 1 year and I was able to commit 100% for 1 year.
Mm.
But I wouldn't have been able to do it for another year because it takes so much out of you and you need to sacrifice a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's those... and. We're spending a bit of time on this, but I think it's worth noting things like...
He's got 11-year career, so we can speak a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. With you know, a mountain of victories.
He kind of deserves it a bit. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about those one percenters, and if you had continued for another year, and although we're talking about Caleb, you still are a great example because it's so fresh. You know, you're back in Melbourne pre-season training. You and Elliot want to go out with friends for a late dinner. You're watching your watch the whole time. You're going, I got to go do 5 hours tomorrow morning.
Yeah,
I got to be up. I don't want to have a late night. I don't want to drink too much. I shouldn't be eating this. You know, it's all those things which most people probably
don't. I say that to myself every time. I like the laugh.
I still wrestle with myself as well. But that's it. You can't. You've got to be all in. You've got to say, sorry, hun, I don't want to go out with our friends tonight. I do, but... Yeah, I've actually got to train tomorrow.
I need to get the most out of my training. So
the sacrifice is immense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's look at just some highlights for Caleb. Like I said, 11-year career, 60-plus professional wins, 5 Tour de France stages, 5 Giro stages, 1 Vuelta. I'm not going to carry on, but there's also 9 Tour Down Under stage wins in there. There's a second at Milan Torino, Sanremo twice.
Yeah.
There's a lot of extra good results.
Yeah, probably the one thing missing, and hindsight's a wonderful thing, so it is all about celebrating his career, but he was so close to a monument, and that would have just topped off, I think.
Twice close,
exactly.
In Milan Sanremo.
But another interesting fact, that first Grand Tour stage winner of the Vuelta, I remember it, he beat two guys who were at their absolute prime, Peter Sagan, who was actually third on that occasion. It was an uphill sprint to the line, and John Degenkolb. That was his first Grand Tour win. Everyone in cycling in Australia, we all knew he was capable of what he's now achieved. But that was confirmation that day. When he won that stage, we went, okay, he's just beaten Peter Sagan, who no one beats Sagan on an uphill drag to the line, and Caleb did it with ease. So we knew then he was going to go on and you know have some pretty big wins.
One of the good memories I've got from Caleb, there's two. There's one where he it's the same year, but, you know, he was... waiting for that win. And the first baby was here, the wife was here, and remember we were and then he got
was
the win.
Was it Albie?
I think it was
might have been Albie.
And then he got the win, and then he got two or three that year. Like
yes.
He just needed to unlock.
Yeah.
And that just proves exactly what we just said. You need to be 100%, but you also need to unlock mentally that winning instinct.
That was a great day.
To a magnificent career, I think, Caleb, we know actually sometimes he listens to this podcast.
Yeah,
I know from
mate,
Jason. So.
You could have let us know. Get on the pot. We want him on.
Yeah, I know.
Let's demand it.
If I tell you it's already
come on, your new best friend is Jason Backer. Jason, if you're listening, he's manager.
Do you think Jason and I haven't traded heaps of texts yesterday?
I know. You would have been all over it. Yeah.
It's coming up, however. But anyway, we wanted to just celebrate and spend a bit of time celebrating Caleb Ewan here. So thank you, Caleb, for everything you've done. Well done. Let's talk about cycling on the road. There's a lot happening. Like we mentioned, there is the Giro at the end of the week. But let's talk about this week. What's happening here? Vuelta Feminina, 3 stages, 3 winners, 3 leaders.
What do we make of it?
Yeah, it's been good so far. It's a little bit treacherous on stage 2 with the wet weather and some very slippery roads in Spain. As
stage 1 as well,
see.
The start was a bit...
A bit Spanish time trial.
Well, I don't know who is...
A la Delgado missing the start.
I don't know who's to blame for this starting malfunction, but because it was a bit the commissaires, which aren't necessarily Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually strange that the race organisation, being Spanish, didn't leave a little bit of lenience,
yeah,
bit of buffer for the teams to start.
It was about getting their bikes checked, yeah, and they did it late or too late.
Yeah, so usually before the start of a time trial, you have to go and put your bike in this jig to measure and make sure it fits within the UCI regulations.
And then you've got to stay there. Is that the right, is that correct?
Yeah.
That's, because obviously if you go away with your bike, you can, you know, make an adjustment.
What happens usually is when the team arrives, the mechanics will take all the bikes, you know, an hour out or more,
yep,
to get them checked, like a pre-check. And then when the riders go up, they have to arrive more than 15 minutes before. And
more than 15?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And then all the bikes get checked again.
Right.
So they get checked twice.
Yep.
The first time is just to make sure that there's nothing that needs to be
adjusted.
But then, yeah, I don't know, it's a bit of a...
The follow-on started from Movistar. Maybe they were just having a chat. Movistar allegedly took a bit too long, then it sort of displaced, and then he ended up with Team Visma being late.
That was crazy.
But Team Visma, I think, like, two of their riders missed the start, is not ideal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's not
but then we moved on, and then Team Visma succeeded with Marion Vos. Marion Vos back, still in our winning ways.
Yeah, expertly through the final few wet corners where they're... people behind her were crashing, but she managed. She knew that she needed to be in first wheel in that last corner, and then there was no one contending really for that sprint.
Talk about someone, you know, we talk about Caleb and
retirement.
Someone who is just hungry.
Yeah,
she is the goat. I mean, the longevity of her career and to keep winning, it's... You know, we'd say, oh, yeah, Marianne Vos won again.
Remember at the tour last year,
take a moment
the start
to
of
think
the tour,
about it.
And I think we probably asked you that question as well as a contender, but we were asking riders, how many wins for Marianne Vos? Nobody had the number. Because even Wikipedia doesn't have the number. No one knows how many races
it's
she
like
won.
200.
No one really knows the number. It's over 200, but there's no real...
It's phenomenal.
Like, it'd be a bit of work to go back and reconcile all her wins.
Yeah, down into the archives.
But what I love is that every time she wins, she's just as ecstatic as though it's her first. Like, she goes all in and the emotion's clear.
She's respectful, isn't she? Like that, but also... And it's not a fake celebration, it's real. But it doesn't matter what race it is.
Mm.
She punches the air... It's like it's like she tells herself, this could be my last win or this could be my last race as a professional. So she knows how to just enjoy and live in the moment.
And when teammates win as well, because when Pauline Ferrand-Prévot won Roubaix, she was the first one to congratulate her, to even though she was the main favorite. But anyway,
she was actually, I think, in Roubaix, like riding around looking for her. Like, where's Pauline? Then she finally found her.
It was pretty cool.
But she's not leading the race. I can't say the name. Your Dutch is better than mine. Who's leading the race?
Femke Ger. No, let me start again. Femke Gerritsen.
Oh, very good.
Femke.
Yeah, the G is a ch.
In
Dutch.
Well, we call her Femke. Team SD Works.
Yeah.
A good lead. You said now the Volta Femina from now is a bit more uphill. Is it about to change all over?
Yeah, I think we'll see another leader come around in stage four. SD Works did a really great lead out into the stage yesterday. I don't think there was anyone coming around them to win that one. So that was impressive. I think the climbers will start to show their faces in the coming stages. Unfortunately, Aussie Neve Bradbury crashed on the wet stage two and I think lost almost 2 minutes in time. So, she's not going to be... competing for the win, I think, but she can still be.
Is the Vuelta not the race where anything can happen? So, or is it just the level? And from now, it's too hard for Neve to potentially really dream of a comeback at the forefront. I'm talking podium.
I think potentially she could get on the podium. There might be some bad luck for some other GC riders. I haven't looked to see if there's a there's often a stage where crosswinds really affect the Vuelta Femenina. So I haven't looked to see if there's a stage where that might happen. But yeah, also there's two like really long mountaintop finishes. I think maybe the sixth and eighth or stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's plenty of time to make up, but yeah, the top GC contenders haven't lost any time. So
would be hard.
Unless Demi Vollering crashes and loses time, then...
Well, this is it now, isn't it? I'm really keen to see where... We know Vollering's form is good, but now she's the specialty at the longer climbs. So what I'm keen to see is what other women in the peloton now, as we speak, can climb with her or can be close, because it's all building for me for the Tour de France fun.
Yeah.
And who is going to challenge Vollering at the Tour de France? We know Nieuwendoma. We know what she's capable of. She's a defending champ. But who else is going to step up?
Where's Anna van der Breggen at?
Yeah.
We saw some good early season signs, but not much in the last, in the like Ardennes week.
Yeah.
So much. So.
And what about Garcia, Mavi Garcia? She's with, obviously, Livalula, Jayco.
Yeah.
Is she in the league? Can she be in the league?
I don't think so. She's occasionally she has a really standout performance, but I think that team might actually, they've got this new Italian rider, Monica Trinca,
mm-hmm.
who was doing really well in the Hilly Classics races.
Yeah.
So
watch that space.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah.
She could be even better than Mavi Garcia.
And guess what? The Vuelta Femenina is all on SBS as well. You can watch it on SBS On Demand every night. It's a fantastic... It's nice to see Spain at this time of the year.
That's your second Spain. Home. Lately,
I just
isn't
love
it?
Spain. Yeah, yeah, so much. But, it's, I don't know, just it's nice. It's just nice. okay, let's talk about the Giro now. It's starting in 2 days as we are recording this podcast. But before we go into the Giro, if you want to stay tuned on the second part of this interview, of this podcast, we'd have an interview. I had a chat with Emily Dixon, who is part of the team where Niamh Bradbury is, and she's the winner of the Zwift Academy. That's coming up in the second part of this podcast. The Giro Macca is upon us, starting this Friday. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot of contention because one man is not here, and we'll still talk about him. It's Tadej Pogacar. He's won it last year. He's still headlining it because he's won it with Panache last year. He's not here this year. Does that open up for something spectacular from all the others? Have they scrambled to say, he's not going here, I am so going to the Giro because I can do something?
Is it
that fitting?
Yeah, it is. And the Giro never, ever in 100 years, has it been going for 100? It hasn't disappointed. Mm-hmm. It's always a super exciting race. Yeah, there's been times when they say, it's not stacked with sprinters or it's not stacked with the GC guys. A bunch of them are going to the Tour de France. And then it turns out to be this crazy bike race. You know, there's crazy big long breakaways that turn the GC on its head, or there's, you know, a rider crashes out, or this happens. So
there's always drama.
The
weather plays a part.
The Dolomites always give us something special.
Snow.
Yeah.
Volcano. There's a volcano coming up.
Stage half cancelled. So
we remember a few years ago, like, we keep on watching the Stelvio. Is there snow? Is the road open? We had the wet camp. There was like 2 meters of snow.
Yeah, there was 3 meters, 4 days before. We're like, there's a chance. No, but look, 12 at the moment, I think there's about 12 Australians subject to confirmation, but that's what it's looking like. Obviously, Jai Hindley, former winner, Caden Groves for the sprinters, for the Aussies, that is. So there's a bunch of Aussies, Michael Storer,
Simon Clark,
Lucas
again.
Hamilton. Great to see Lucas Hamilton for Ineos Grenadiers. He's been fairly sort of quiet, and we almost forget he's with Ineos after spending the majority of his career with Jayco. So a lot to look forward to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a start in Albania.
Yes, which was also touch and go until a few weeks ago.
they like to play with fire, the Giro organizers, don't they?
Don't they? Yeah.
But let's go down to some of the favorites. When we did a preview, you're rating Primoz. You think Primoz is Primoz the man to beat here?
Oh, I think he is. I mean, it's interesting in that preview, and I think there was one comment said, I'll bet he'll crash out before he before he makes it to the finish. And the reality is, yes, he has crashed a few times.
Statistically,
it's not wrong. But what is wrong about that comment is that he won the Giro 2 years ago. He is so consistent. He's won four Vueltas. He's podiumed at the Tour de France. He is Mr. Consistent. Mm-hmm. So if he has a clean, healthy run and good support from his team, so if he has his teammates there, and of course Jai Hindley has a great plan B, I think he's the man to beat. You know, over 3 weeks he's proven. There's other riders in there that aren't proven and don't have the CV that he has. And
yeah, definitely. I think he's the most. He's got the track record for Grand Tours and other, you know, week-long tours as well. So it's hard to go past it. And the fact that he's won, I think the statistics of him crashing are a bit unfair because he's actually performed and won more than he's crashed out.
Yeah.
And to do that, you have to get through a lot of, you know, ups and downs
in
risky situations.
You got to survive a lot, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But look at the team as well. Well, you said he's got Jai Hindley with him, but Martinez, Trantink, Moscon.
That's already it's mega a solid. Monster team. Yeah, it's an amazing team.
Where do we see the rivalry here? Is it UAE?
The contenders? Yeah, it is totally UAE. And we know they're in great form. So
Are you so?
Jai Vine is in great form.
Mm-hmm. Finished third.
Unproven over 3 weeks.
But Jai Vine finishing third in Romandie.
He's got great legs. He will play a support role.
What's
I think.
His best result been in a 3 week tour?
Probably Vuelta. He won a couple of stages.
Yeah, but he also crashed and lost a lot of time, I'm fairly sure.
He was leading the King of the Mountains and crashed out.
He crashed out going to his car. Remember this?
Going to his car. Yeah, he went to his car and he fell. No, he didn't crash
the car.
He actually got back on that day. Well, he didn't crash out that day, but he crashed out again afterwards, I think. He's had a few too, actually.
I'm going to throw one here. Tim Visma, they're going with Van Aert. Van Aert, that's his first Giro.
Yeah,
unproven in Italy, of course, but Van Aert having a very difficult start mentally, I think, of the season. He hasn't got his winning ways.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
He hasn't got his winning ways here.
Mm.
What can we expect from somewhere? Who is he riding for? Is he riding for himself? Is he riding for somebody else in the team?
Yates, maybe? Wilco Kelderman, Steven Kruiswijk.
Simon Yates,
absolutely. I would think they'll be riding for Simon Yates for the overall GC. I think he's still got it in him. Wilco Kelderman, as we know, has podiumed previously. Kruiswijk should have won the Giro.
Yes,
when he crashed across the top of the Stelvio a few years ago, that was the one that got away from Stefan Kruiswijk.
Van Baarle?
Yeah. I mean, he's more of an all rounder, Van Baarle. I'd love to see Van Aert win a stage. If he can win a stage, I think that's box ticked.
I think they're probably going with a bit of a. We'll put everyone out there, no distinct leader to begin with, and just see how the chips fall.
Yep.
And whoever ends up being at an advantage on GC, then they'll support.
Mm-hmm. And the Giro's like that. Mm. It's conducive for that, I think. If you go in with one plan A and you don't have a plan B, C or D, you've sort of got to have it at the Giro.
Yes, okay.
Because so many things can happen. So on paper, you can argue that Visma, Lisa Bike aren't the strongest team, but actually they come, as you say, Grace, with, you know, a bunch of plans and let the cards fall, let the dust settle, and they actually could have a guy that could win the race.
At this stage, you're managing Van Aert. You're happy with any kind of win, or you prefer him to win a sprint or to win a bit of a mountain?
Any kind of win. Because he's proven. He doesn't need to prove he can win a bunch sprint. He doesn't need to prove, you know, he can win an undulating day. What he needs, as you say, to your point, it's been mentally a tough start for him. He just needs a win. Mm-hmm. He needs a win on the board to give him that confidence back.
Couple of Aussies I want to flag, first of all, Michael Storer. Yep. On the back of a fantastic Tour of the Alps, which we know it's been a race that prepares riders for the Giro.
Yep.
It's a lot shorter, it's a week. But what can we expect from Storer? A king of the mountain somewhere?
I think we can totally expect a stage win. he's had a great start to the season. Remember the stage win at Paris-Nice as well, the summit finish in the snow. I think we should expect a stage win. And the question mark is, and we touched on it last week, can he go for 3 weeks?
Yeah. I also think that if he focuses on being a GC rider, then the likelihood of a stage win is less.
You're right. So if you just want to kill my dream, don't you?
You've done, but you're right. You're like absolutely right. It seems like I have something against Michael Sorry.
No, you're right. You're spot on.
But, you know, as soon as you're in contention for GC, then no one's going to let you go up the road.
No.
So if he loses time earlier in the the Giro, then maybe it'll open it up for some stage wins. So it's very dependent on what strategy they want to go with.
But the Giro, like we keep saying, it's the type of race that Michael Storer could get in a break on day four, take 7 minutes, and suddenly put himself... And I know it's a long time ago now. Richie Porte's first success was at the Giro. They took 10 minutes and he wore the maglia rosa until the last, you know, 4 or 5 days or something. Mm. It was crazy. So the Giro, you know, that doesn't happen at the Tour de France. It's so controlled. It's so, teams are so sort of jumping on breakaways, keeping them pegged at 2 minutes. The Giro, you can get these crazy things happen. You're totally right. But Michael Storer is that type of rider where we could see him up the road. He could lose 3 minutes and then gain seven. It's going to be really interesting.
And other, Ozzy, I want to mention, you mentioned just a bit earlier on, but Caden Groves. What can we expect from Caden? He's in a team. There's 5 Belgian, 1 German.
Yep.
That's the Alpecin team. And there's him. What can we expect from him?
Yeah, a stage win. And he won't be satisfied with anything less. He totally wants a stage win. He's got multiple Grand Tour wins now, and he wants to deliver one here. The ultimate goal for Caden is the Tour de France. But we know he's got that on that team. That is always going to be difficult, or at the moment, it's going to be difficult.
But I was leading towards, can he be a Ciclameno jersey? Is it something that he would, jersey for the points?
It's hard to get at the Giro. It's hard to get because of the big mountains.
Oh, is it more Van Aert, someone that can actually play for that?
It's more Van Aert, but Caden, for a solidly built sprinter, he actually climbs pretty well. Obviously not in the big mountains, but on those days where
it's a bit more undulating, and he can pick up some points.
He's impressive. He did it. Remember there was a stage, it was in the Giro last year. He was away with Luke Plapp, Alaphilippe. Alaphilippe got beaten in the end.
Stop it.
Yeah, by the Spaniard, wasn't it, for the stage with the Movistar rider.
He didn't want it.
But Caden was incredible. He almost did too much work early on in that stage. So if he comes with good form, I think there's an outside chance.
Okay.
He can win the Ciclameno jersey.
And then last question about the Giro, because it will all unfold on SBS. Pidcock is going to be here. That's most likely to be... Oh, he might do the Vuelta, but we know he's not doing the Tour de France. Mm. The importance for Pidcock in a new outfit, new sponsors, new everything, for him to perform well here.
Yeah.
Is it showtime for Pidcock?
I think this will be quite a target for him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the
overall
the Tour is not on the cards, so... if they want to
target... The GC, you mean?
Yeah, GC in a Grand Tour and sort of prove that he's of the calibre to go after it when they eventually get a run at the Tour in future years. I think this is important.
Jury's out for me what he'll do here. I really don't know. He hasn't... And I'm being hypercritical. I'm not critical, just... I expected more from him throughout spring.
Yes.
I expected a bit more from him. And I didn't see it. He still had, you know, had some great results, but I think most fans probably expected a bit more from Pidcock. But maybe his prep has been more built around Giro.
Maybe because we saw him at one of the Middle Eastern Tours win.
Yep.
Early in
the
year.
True.
And then he didn't perform at his usual level in the classics. So maybe he's just that's. Because he wasn't targeting them. He's been training for these longer tours. So I don't think we can discount him because of his classic results.
And one last mention, because I have to wave the flag, but Romain Bardet, that's his last Grand Tour ever.
Yes.
He's been an all-class rider all over his career. He mentioned on French TV, he said he wanted to finish with the Giro because he's just... is the Grand Tour where he performed the less well. He hasn't got
unfinished business.
He's got absolutely unfinished business, and he's on top of his form, and he wanted to finish pretty much in and around the Giro so he can sit back on his sofa and be happy with the performance he also had at the Giro. Is that class?
Yeah, and you know, with Romain Bardet, he will not just ride around in the peloton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a swan song. We know his swan song comes after that in Dauphiné, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
But the Giro, he will go all in. And that goes back to, you know, talking about retirement. Retirement is looming. He's announced it. So to commit yourself to 3 weeks and to commit yourself fully, which he will, is impressive. He is all class.
He was yellow jersey at his last Tour de France on day one.
Yeah.
Is the target to also wear the pink at some point?
Yeah, I'm sure he won't hold back in trying.
No, he'll give it. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that. Yeah, he deserves every success. He's such a humble guy and so good to interview. He's a real gentleman of the sport.
You should try him in French. It's even better.
Is he? Actually, I reckon he's better in English.
Okay, the Giro starts on Friday.
Before we move on from the Giro, I think we just need to mention one other Australian that's a potential for the GC, Luke Plapp.
Yes, Jaco Alula.
Yeah, I think he's an outside chance, but from their lineup, looks like they'll be supporting him for the lead.
And I saw in the quotes, Chris Harper as well will be supported at the start. So that's the goal. Yeah, it's really interesting to see what Jaco Alula can do. It's a big investment they've had in Plappy as well.
Yeah.
And eventually he's given them results already, but, you know,
they want to grow.
His contract's big enough that they want
Do they want
results.
A Grand Tour from him?
Oh, they'd love to. That I think that was the plan when they signed him. They believe in him as a Grand Tour potential. So, yeah, good point.
Yeah, Rose. And I think he's made statements to say that he's capable of that. He's not shy in setting big goals for himself, and he doesn't always achieve them. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he goes. I don't expect to see him on the podium, but hopefully a top 10 finisher.
It's good we've got two Aussies on an Aussie team that are going for GC.
Expect the unexpected. That's the Giro, of course, starting on Friday night on SBS. It's all going to be available on your television, but also on SBS On Demand. Tune in. And you're going to be commentating a good chunk of it.
Well, I'll be taking the first few days with the Couch Peloton. I'll be joining you, Couch Peloton, and then I think following Wednesday, I'll be on for the majority.
So a week from the moment we record.
First few stages are pretty boring anyway. So, don't worry about it. I'll just jump in a bit later.
Okay, we'll take a short break, and then when we come back, we talk to Emily Dixon straight after this.
All right, it's now time to talk to Emily Dixon. Emily has been making a mark in Europe now for a few weeks. Emily, first of all, welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So we know you a little bit on the scene here in Australia, but we also know you because you won a certain prize with an ex-sponsor of us, Zwift. But it's a major prize because there's a big kudos on how you make your way to professional cycling. And there's many Australians that have done it before, but tell us all about the story, how this came about for you.
Yeah, so I didn't really know too much about Zwift Academy until the last year or so. I mean, I've always ridden on Zwift. That's kind of where my cycling journey started, I guess.
It's kind of your generation. This is the thing of your generation, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We're pretty lucky to have it as a, like, just as an option to, like, train. I mean, especially for myself, I live in somewhere where it's quite busy with traffic. And, I mean, especially as, a 15, 16-year-old, and for people younger as well, like, it's not so safe riding by yourself a lot of the time. And especially around school as well, you end up having to train outside in the busy times. So Zwift is a really accessible thing for training. And I've And I basically used that when I started. Yeah, I just, and I mean, I couldn't go outside 5Ks from my house. Kind of the only option to do any kind of long rides.
Did you discover you were that good on Zwift that you thought, I'm going to try this Zwift Academy, see what can I do?
Oh, no, I didn't think I was that good. I think that's why it was more of a surprise to me. I didn't have a coach or anything when I started, so I didn't really know what my numbers were relative to anyone else my age or anything. I just started doing some racing and stuff and I really enjoyed it. I did some outside racing as well, and I did all right in that. So I kind of just continued. I got a coach, I started training a lot more, and then one, I did a Zwift race actually that was part of the Zwift Academy, like talent ID program. And it was because one of my races on the road had been cancelled because of the weather. So I did that, and then I thought my numbers were all right. And then, I was like, okay, I'm just going to try this Zwift Academy thing and see what happens.
How did that evolve? Because you got into it, you got few races, you done very well, and then did the pressure starting to mount up a bit until the ultimate few last races where you just go, I can actually make this thing a reality? Because the price, we'll talk about this in a second, but the price is very big. You know, what you're doing now is pretty big, let's face it. So when did that sort of click in your head going, This can actually become a reality?
Not really until like I kind of finished the workouts, because even, I mean, the workouts were so hard. Like one of them I almost didn't finish. I don't know if anyone knows erg mode on Zwift, but it will kind of just like, you'll just start going, your pedal stroke will be so slow because you can't hold the watts. Like it was really hard. So I didn't really think I had the watts to do them to make it in like the finals, but then they contacted me afterwards and they were like, hey, like we'd love to have an interview with you, and then kind of started the process of that. It wasn't really the whole thing. For the whole time I didn't really know I had the possibility of making finals, but okay. I pushed and I'm glad I did.
Yeah, so fast forward now, you're in Europe. I can see some nice red brick on your wall outside, something that is not necessarily Australian, but how was the whole transfer to Europe, and how is, first of all, where are you in Europe, and also how is Europe welcoming you?
Yeah, so I'm based in Spain, which is pretty cool. So in Girona, which is like cycling heaven, I guess. It's amazing. It's treating me very well. It was definitely a big move. I think it is for anyone. And for myself, being just turned 18, it was a lot. I have lived out of home for a month last year, but I think it's not the same when you know you're going for 6, 7, 8 months, some people more. Leaving behind all your friends and family, you kind of have to start your own support network and start like meeting new people when you're there, and it can be definitely hard. There's just so much. So, like, I remember saying to my roommate, I was like, oh my God, there's so many like new things. Like, even like I'm getting all this new kit, and like it's almost a bit overwhelming, like all the new things, and you have to learn the new place and you get lost on your rides. Like, it's just part of the process, but. Yeah, it's definitely a lot, but I think you just have to know that it will get easier. But
do you realize that, because we know Girona, we hear this name. I was lucky enough to be there around Christmas last year, and it's such a beautiful place. The old town is absolutely stunning, let alone the food as well. Like, the food is unreal. But do you pinch yourself when you go on a ride and you go, oh, here's Durbo, here's such and such? Like, you meet them in the coffee shop, in the boulangerie, in the Mercadona. You know, you sort of meet them around.
Yeah, it's like 100%. You've described it very well. It is a bit pinch me kind of every time I'm riding. Like, I'll be just riding. First of all, the roads are amazing. It's so smooth, and the cars are like the best. A lot better than Australian cars. I'm so sorry. The drivers in Spain are a lot nicer towards the bikes, but yeah, it's so cool. Like, you'll just turn up at a coffee shop and they'll be like, like Cassia just rocked up to the coffee shop. I know she's in my team, but
yeah,
I mean,
but still,
cool. Like, yeah, you're just like, they're just like, oh, hey, I'm like, what? Like, yeah, it's nothing, like, it's nothing special. Everyone just sees them around. It's crazy. But to me, I'm like, oh my goodness, like, I'm the ultimate fangirl right now.
Yeah, let's talk about the team itself as well, because you've got a good, a fantastic team. You got Cassia Nyodoma, you said, but there's Neve Bradbury, there's Beth around as well, that is building such an incredible infrastructure around riders and Aussie riders, yourself, and I said, like, Neve Bradbury as well. How is the atmosphere in the team, and are you mate with Neve? Because she's come from the same area than you. She's done the Zwift Academy. She's won it. Like, she knows all about it. She's not that much older than you, but she's got a lot more experience. And specifically last year, she had an incredible year as well. So I guess that gives you a lot of hopes as well.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, and I've thought about this. Like, I definitely see myself a lot in her. Like, I mean, obviously, she also came through the Zwift Academy pathway, and I see her as an amazing role model for myself because of, like, I mean, she's very headstrong. She knows what she wants, and she won't let anything get in the way of that. And I think that's very, like, something I look up to a lot, and I think a lot of other people would as well. And being so young as well, she's achieved so much already. It's crazy. So, yeah, like, I think people like that are really important, like, to be able to look up to, and it helps, like, give you, I mean, she definitely, like, she's so amazing. She gave me her phone number straight away when we first met in Portugal for the Zwift Academy. She's like, hey, just let me know if you need anything. And yeah, she's just been, like, helping me out with, like, sorting out my visa, and it's just, yeah, like, little things like that. It's really nice to have someone who understands what you're going through, because she has said that she struggled a bit when she first came to Europe, and it's definitely very full on. And having someone else to kind of help guide you through and, you know, say, you know, I've been through that, it's okay, it will get better. Just little things like that. I think super important to have people like that.
Yeah, and you've got, like I said, you've got Beth, you've got Tiffany Cromwell as well. It's a very Australian colored team as well.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's really nice to hear the Aussie accents. Like, I don't know, it's really refreshing. Like, when you get a lot of European accents, it's nice to just be able to, you know, I don't know, there's something about it. It's really, yeah.
I mean, even me, you hear, I've got another accent as well, but I love the Aussie accent as well. what would be a successful year for you this year? Where are your targets? What do you expect to do this year?
Yeah, so I think for me, I don't really have so much expectations for results. I mean, I know that will come with time, but I think it's something I've struggled with is, like, positioning in the bunch. I mean, the European peloton is so different to Australia, as most people would find out coming from Australia.
Sorry to interrupt, but because of numbers or because the aggressivity, where does that surprise you?
I think both. Like, you go, especially the numbers, definitely. You go from racing with, like, 40 women to 170, 180. Like, that's crazy. Like, you can't, and also the roads are very different. Like, in Australia, you can kind of just move up anytime you want because the roads are so wide. But in Europe, it's so technical and definitely, it's just a different style of racing. It's very full on. And I think, yeah, it takes a lot more mental strength as well. Like, you really have to be switched on all the time. You really can't zone out. And yeah, I mean, when you're also, like, physically on your limit, it's very hard to mentally also be there as well. So I think it just takes a lot more out of you. I mean, definitely stepping up from juniors as well to under 23s and elites is like, the racing so much harder as well. So yeah, it's just a lot to think of at once, I think.
Yeah. Is your calendar going to be tailored towards your progression? So I guess you can't tell me what you're going to do at the back of the season. But what is the next few weeks looking for you? Where will you dip and try to get some knowledge from in what are the next races?
So there's three races there next week. So yeah, I mean, I raced in Chamonix last week. It was a very crazy race. But I think I'm really looking to build on my positioning skills and be able to actually be there for the team and be at the front of the race and be more present. So that's something that I'm really looking forward to working on in the next few races. Definitely looking forward to seeing progression, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So
we'll definitely keep an eye on you, Emily. Maybe if you want us to wish you for something, you talk about progression and stuff, but if we were to talk to you at the end of the year, what would be a good achievement for this year if we talk to you around Christmas this year?
I don't know. Like, again, I don't really have a specific, I don't have aims for positions in races or what I want to win or what, like, I think more this year is more about, like, learning how the peloton works in Europe. And if I can say by the end of the year that I'm comfortable to be at the front of the race, be present, be able to do my job for the team, I think I can say it's been a successful year. And being able to be a part of the wins for the team, because obviously a win for someone in the team is a win for everyone, and you want to be able to say that you've made a difference in that win. I think that's really something I could be proud of.
And I know the roster is very big around the Canyon Tram team as well, but as a team you have a big target to defend, of course, the Tour de France this year to defend. So as a team, as a unit, that must drive the team forward.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. So being part of the generation team for Canyon-SRAM Zonda Crypto, I won't be part of the Tour de France, but I mean, definitely as a whole for the team, both the World Tour and the development team, it's definitely a huge driving factor. And I think it really keeps everyone super motivated, and they're like, really, that like it's theirs, and it's theirs to prove and defend. Yeah. And I think really special about the team.
100%. Look, we wish you all the best for this year. Thank you for sparing the time. And the door of the podcast is always open. So you got my number. You can always give us a bit of a shout out what's going on, because we like to follow Aussies on the up, especially Aussies in Europe, because Maca has got a lot of war stories that he keeps going on about Europe. And it's all together very interesting.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So that was, of course, Emily Dixon. She's touched on a lot of things you understand and you know, Grace. I don't think you moved to Europe when you were 18, but 18 is a very young age. But you made your way up this way. Did you move to Europe when you were 18?
No. No, I was much older by the time I moved over. I did spend time in Europe when I was young. And, yeah, the thought of sort of, and especially for her, because she did this Zwift Academy program, mm-hmm. and then it was basically like, okay, you've won, go back to Australia, pack your things, and then you're back here and you're starting racing, which is quite dramatic. And she would have had to say goodbye to people really quickly and organize stuff without much,
yes.
Yeah,
notice.
Much notice. Yeah. And then, yeah, you get there and you do have support from the team, but really no one's solving
your
everyday problems.
Yeah. Well, apparently Niamh was helping with the visa as well.
Yeah, that's really, really nice to hear that she does have some fellow Aussies that are looking out for her. Mm-hmm. I think that helps a lot.
What's the window for her to perform and to make it to the big team? She's in the development team. She's young, like we said, 18. There's a lot of time, but is there a lot of time for her to perform? There's one thing performing on Zwift. There's one thing performing on the road. She mentions it. The peloton are different. The roads are different. The behaviors are different. What's the window for her?
Yeah, I think it really depends. She doesn't have to get results this year, but it will depend on the potential that she shows and the rate at which she learns. So if throughout the year she's showing that she's improving with positioning, she's able to help the team, and you know, like by the end of the year, there's a difference in the start of the year, then she'll continue getting contracts. If she improves a little bit and then like stalls and it really shows that, okay, there's not much to work with here, mm-hmm. she's sort of reached a maximum, then the window's shorter, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yeah, it's tough in the sense, isn't it? Because for every Emily Dixon now, and when I'm talking, well, both men and women, but specifically with the women, because I watch it and go, it's exploded. There's another 100. There's another 200, just like her. And another 100 of those 100 of the 200, say, for example, and I'm just plucking figures out here, but they are progressing quickly.
Yes.
They are learning to, you know, and we saw it. And, that, you know, a name just popped into my head, and I haven't seen too much of her in the last year or two, and you'll know this stage. Was it Ricarda Bauernfeind, the young German who won the stage of the tour? I think she was 19 or 20. She was a former junior world champ. And I was that day, I just remember being so, like, wow. Because that was a brutal day. It was stinking hot.
Yep, I was.
Remember?
I
didn't want to say it.
I was on the back. Every climb I was getting dropped, and then the team would be like, come on, get back on. I was like, can I stop trying?
Because I was watching you going, oh, my God, it must be hard because you're suffering. And this young whippersnapper is attacking the breakaway, and I think she rode the last 30 kilometres at 40 kilometres an hour on undulating roads. So back to – I digress a bit, but – back to Emily Dixon, that's the benchmark, isn't it, now, for young women getting into pro cycling? You want to make it. You know, you maybe don't have to be at that level, but that's what you've got to aspire to be.
Yeah, you got to show that you're on a trajectory, I think. But, yeah, it is amazing. I think listening to that interview, though, I'm optimistic about Emily Dixon because she sounds like she's got a good head on her shoulders. She's quite mature for an 18-year-old. She's aware of the challenges that she's going to have this year, and she's ready for it. I think that, yeah, that really helps. You can't be naive going over there, really, because it's not just the racing, it's the lifestyle, and just, yeah, sort of getting through tough times.
Is Girona, is that the best place for her now? You know, to have, we know it's a big expat community, a lot of English speakers, plenty of cyclists
around.
Yeah, I never chose to live in Girona, but I think for a young Australian cyclist, it's a really good option because there's a support network there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, also her team, Canyon SRAM, I think they have staff that live in Girona as well. So if there's anything that goes wrong, she'll have people there to help her.
What's interesting as well is the funnel, how it changed, because you got the Zwift Academy, you got the Pro Cycling League as well. Those funnels are getting super important for riders, and it's happening in Australia, it's happening on other countries. We saw the UK as well, although there's no contract, but there's a league as well happened with Rafa. That's changed the way you make your way to professional cycling, I guess.
Yeah, it's not just about getting noticed by scouts or, you know, having a really strong agent in your corner that's putting your name forward to teams. Now there's some, like, pretty black and white...
data.
Yeah, data and these competitions, basically. If you come out on top, then you're getting something. So I don't think it's, like, we can't have all contracts going that way. There needs to be some grey zone, but sometimes all a rider needs is just a little bit of a boost up, and then they can prove themselves.
But Aussies have done well here. We talk about Neve Bradbury, we talk about Jay Vine. This is a funnel that has brought in Australian riders from our shores to the European shores.
Yeah, because it's harder for Australians to get over there and prove themselves. They're not racing in Europe already. So, yeah, there needs to be some sort of assistance to just, like, initiate it. So I can see that, you know, we've got a lot of untapped talent in Australia that just doesn't get a leg up.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that was the podcast this week. It's a longer podcast, of course, but it's the week of the Giro. We couldn't pass you. And Maka raises his arm.
I've just thought of something. Just to end on a funny note, I'm riding home a week ago now, I think. I've been out on a big ride for me these days. I actually had been to the Dandenongs. I'm coming in on the bike path, one of those arterial bike lanes that bring you in along the Yarra River. And you know when you hate people, other cyclists coming at you and they overtake and they're coming at you because they want to overtake another cyclist, sort of like driving a car. And so I'm about to sort of hurl some abuse at this cyclist coming at me. Guess who it was?
Sarah Gigante.
Sarah Gigante. So Sarah, I know you're listening. And it was only until it was at the very last minute I realised, so I didn't hurl abuse. And it was too late to yell out to her, and I realised sort of immediately after that it was her. So, Sarah, I'm watching you, and I think she's now headed back to Europe. Hope she has, and look forward to her racing soon. But just mind your manners on the bike path.
Commuter wars.
Commuter wars, yeah.
Okay, thank you for joining us. This weekend, of course, the Giro, as I said, is on SBS on television from this Friday. And there's, of course, the Vuelta Feminina every evening until then on SBS On Demand as well. Thank you for coming, and then we'll see you next week.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.